Welcome to the Melton Forge Works podcast. I'm going to take you along on my day-to-day adventures in bladesmithing and blacksmithing. I'll be talking about the people involved in the craft and the tools and the methods that go along with it. So thanks for listening. Hey, welcome back to the podcast. Today is April the 27th. Of 2021. It's early in the morning, and I'm going to get this podcast recording in because I'm really excited to get this episode pushed out today. Because on today's episode, I've got a guest with me, and I think everybody's going to be pretty interested to hear from him. His name is John Rigoni. He's a blacksmith and a firefighter in Texas. And today we're going to talk a little bit about his background and just about where he kind of got some of his training and about some of his tools and his work ethic and his YouTube channel. And I think I've mentioned this before in the past, but if you don't know John Rigoni of Rigoni Ironworks, stop the podcast right now, go to YouTube and look his stuff up. It's just Rigoni Ironworks, R-I-G-O-N-I. And anyway, I think you'll really enjoy it. He has some amazingly clean forging videos, where the tooling and the methods that he uses are precisely and perfectly explained without talk. You know, he just shows the tools and it's great. So anyway, I was really thankful to have John on the podcast. I enjoyed talking to him and I think you're going to enjoy getting to hear from him. So here we go.
Hey, John.
Yes, sir.
Hey, I got you. All right.
All right.
I'm using this tape a call app. So it's kind of funky. You have to call this one number and then call another one and then merge the calls and then it starts recording. But I think if we can hear each other, we're good.
Okay, fair enough.
Well, first of all, thanks, man. I really appreciate you taking the call. I know it's kind of weird just getting some random stranger out of the blue saying, hey, do you want to be on a podcast?
Well, thanks for having me on. It'll be, we'll give it a whirl. New experience.
Yeah. Yeah. I really appreciate it. Longtime fan and admirer of your video work and your blacksmith work. I love it. And last weekend I was at a tire hammer build in over in Louisiana, and we were nearing the end of the class and we were bolting the dies on the tire hammers. You know, they're little small flat dies.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the guys were talking about, you know, what they wanted to do. You know, these guys were saying they wanted to make combo dies and all this stuff. And of course, I don't know how much you know about the tire hammer or Clay Spencer in general, but you know, he's a big proponent of the, what's the guy, Clifton Ralph school of using flat dies with tooling, you know?
Yeah.
Keeping flat dies on a hammer and using tooling. And this guy that was jumped in and says, man, have you seen that video from Rigoni Ironworks with the die saddle and the adjustable kiss blocks? And so then like three other people jumped over and they're like, yeah, man, his videos are great. And then I thought, well, I got to get John on and just talk to him.
I downloaded those plans years ago, and that was the first, that was kind of like my first, I built a treadle hammer with my dad when I first started. Total disaster. The thing just forged rhombuses, but it was an attempt. And then it was like, all right, well, I'm going to save up and get plans. I'm going to build the tire hammer. It looks cool as hell. I think the only challenge is going to be the footprint of the dies. And I ended up going with this Tehinler, which is a Turkish hammer, but I bought the largest, widest dies that they offered for that reason, because it just gives me more surface area. If you built tooling for that smaller hammer, there may be a way to either have just drop down kiss blocks. You just build a saddle and a kiss block for each height. Or if you were doing something approach what I was doing, like this little saddle with a little, what are these things, where it flips down.
Yeah.
A set of keys. it just requires more of a footprint. So you may be able to do one on either side of the die versus mine, which is all on one side. I mean, there are ways around it, but it's definitely handy. I've got combo dies. I've got crowning dies. I really never use them. Much prefer flat dies, and then you can either drop in tooling real quick or just use some type of specialty tool with a handle that you can control. And anyhow, that's kind of my thinking with it. So.
Yeah, I'm moving more in that direction. You know, I've got an 88, and it's got pretty good die space on it. And the more I try to make specialty die saddles and things like that, the more I just keep going back to, you know, like a bolt-on spring tool. Mm-hmm. But there's a guy, one of the guys that was talking with me in the class actually sent me a picture of it the other day. I'll shoot it to you. And it's a miniature version of that flip-over kiss block setup for one of the tire hammers that we built in that class. It's pretty, it looks exactly like yours. You know, it's obvious he still framed your video.
Hey, I copied mine from a bigger version in England. So, I mean, okay. No worries.
Yeah, but it's perfectly fit to that little bitty tire hammer die. I think you'll get a kick out of seeing it. It's pretty cool.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, whatever works. If it's a way to, I like it because it's resettable and it allows you to forge not just one dimension, but you know, rectangular stock with two different keys, two different kind of stocks. I think who am I thinking of? Is it Jeffrey Funk? Something like Agrarian School, something like that. He's got some type of hydraulic. Kiss block system on his hammer, like super crazy thing, move in and out from the side.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I mean, it just, sky's the limit on how far down the rabbit hole you want to go for foraging. But it's to me, it's absolutely necessary. I mean, you've got the power there of the hammer. You have the accuracy of the hammer. And this way you can quickly forge to dimension without having to worry about over foraging or you're tired, you know, at the end of the day and too much on the treadle and boom, now you've over forged the work and it's ruined. So just builds in that safety factor. So long as you can accommodate for a shrink rate of cooling. So if it's, you know, you forge too hot and as it cools down, it shrinks below that, that dimension, unless you build that height into the die, it's something to think about. So,
yeah. You know, I just got my first power hammer about 3 years ago, and it was a little 33-pound self-contained air hammer. And, you know, my initial use, this is what I think most people who are new to power hammers do, is they get a power hammer, and it's just a power squisher. You know, they're just squishing stuff with power hammer, mm-hmm. and they're not thinking a lot about tooling or, you know, dimensional accuracy at all, you know, and for me, the world of power hammer tooling opened. I took a power hammer tools class, with Clay, and, you know, we made die saddles for the hammer and we were able to put in different inserts. And really that was the first time I'd seen that kind of stuff in person. And the whole world of what I could do with a power hammer just opened way up. And it also threw me down this never-ending rabbit hole of making tooling. And so, you know, that's really how I came across your stuff. I started going through YouTube looking for, you know, ideas for tooling for not only the power hammer, but for, the, you know, like the fly press and the treadle hammer and other stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's just this massive, never-ending line of tools that I want to make, you know, for those power forging tools. But I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I just say for the tooling, you hope that it can it can do the job effectively, and if it can do more than one job, is great. But yeah, I mean, it's you. I don't know. I mean, they're look at like the Italians or certain Smiths where it's a lot of flowing forms, rough forging, very creative use of crowning dies. So the work is heavily forged. It's just not. I on this end, I like accuracy and clean lines. Yeah, that was my two cents.
Yeah, well, you can certainly tell, you know, from the videos you're making. You know, I watch your videos and I feel like I'm just going to the shop and just grabbing steel and just kind of haphazardly making things. And I go and watch your stuff and you're very methodic. You're measuring out. There's obviously a lot of thought that goes into that. And when I was looking at your webpage, that was the first time I noticed that you had gone and done some time overseas. And so, how did that come about? And that has to be, I would imagine, where you learned, I guess, the basics of, you know, layout and the measurement and all that.
So, yeah, I going to school. I was going to U of H for a history degree, and this is after the military. I never, growing up, I really had no interaction experience. I've never seen blacksmithing. Remember, there was a book on like Japanese sword making that I thought was super cool, but as a kid, I could never afford it. So I never bought the book. But anyhow, so after that, during college, I was like, you know what? I've just kind of been a little bit of, you know, curiosity. I'm going to try and just do a stock removal, do a knife, and then just slowly, every weekend, it ended up taking up my time to the point that at the 3-year mark of college, like, okay, I'm going to do blacksmithing full time. What's the best route to go for an education? And at the time, I didn't see anything local. So, like, I'm going to see if I can go to Europe somewhere. So I sent an email out to the Baba Group, the British Artist Blacksmith Group.
Right.
Kind of telling my situation. I'm in college. I'm willing to do whatever. Is there anything, you know, any route I could go? And then they mass emailed that to the Smiths over there. And I got a response back from Andrew Rowe in Wales saying, hey, you want a job? I'm doing this large public sculpture work. And then it was just finding, it took a while to find a legal way of going over there. And it was through BUNAC, BUNAC, the student work visa for seniors in college getting out. A lot of kids getting out, they would use that and then go work at the bars over there, something like that. So we're at a hostel, but yeah. Anyhow, so that was my ticket into the country, so to speak. And it got me a 6-month work visa, and I worked in Andy's shop in Wales in Mydrum, which is, I guess, to the west of Carmarthenshire. But anyhow, so worked in Wales for 3 months. We did a large, I was on the tail end of this large public sculpture in Cardiff near their stadium. It was like abstract form of seed pods where it's like mostly fabrication, but you did use compressed air to inflate the seeds. So it was like a 3-dimensional.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Thing. So we did that, some railings for churches. And then I met up at the time the Baba Group had the conference, Pillars of Friendship. This was in 2007. And, while I was there, met Smiths from all over the world and, hooked up with Terry Clark in Surrey in England, and I worked with him for 2 months on pretty much one project. It was a pair of gates for Oxford's physics department, the front and back of that building, you know, property area.
Yeah,
so it was heavy forging. It was it was like sledgehammer work, 12 hours a day, forging rivets, 4-inch. I mean, everything was like 4-inch square solid for that gate. It was just a big project. But no, it was great. Ended up working at a coffee shop in Israel after that. Bounced around Europe, kind of just went to a city in between shops and traveled around the city, taking pictures of all the ironwork I could find. The experience was great. I mean, it was great. It was definitely a culture shock though, because it was kind of like the military, the Marine Corps. I showed up in Andy's shop and I had, I love the craft. I was willing to do whatever, work for nothing, starving artist, the whole bit, but yeah. My skill set wasn't so great. And, it was, as soon as I showed up, it's like, all right, you're on the power hammer and you cannot make a mistake. That's it. I mean, he was hardcore. So, there are several times it's like a come to Jesus moment where, it's like, all right, you got to buckle down. I mean, there are several fantastic shops here in the U.S. It's just over there, seems like there's no room for error, so to speak. I mean, very high professional level over there.
You mentioned Baba and you're not the first person I've talked to that has said that they looked around the U.S. for like an apprenticeship or a journeyman, like a proper journeyman program. And there isn't one here. I know that Abana is working now on. Sorry, there. I got you. Somebody tried to beep in on me.
All right.
I know that Abana is working on like their CBA level 1, 2, and 3 curriculum. And a lot of it's kind of remote learning stuff. I think they are doing some face-to-face, but there's just not that opportunity here in the U.S. that none that I know of, you know,
Illinois University, Carbondale guys, which is like a university degree art program. But you're right. I mean, it's very limited.
Right. But isn't like in Europe, the journeyman idea.
It never died out.
Well.
Yeah, you go
a thing.
You go. Oh, sorry.
No, it's still a thing over there, and for whatever reason, it's not become a thing here. And I think a large part of that is just, you know, the U.S. is still very young. I mean, I went to Europe for the first time a couple years ago, and got to travel around, you know, Amsterdam and parts of the U.K. and France and Belgium and did some of the ironwork inspection, you know, just walk around looking at that stuff. And just the age of the place is kind of staggering. And so they have a history there that we don't have yet. And so they have these long standing programs in crafts like blacksmithing that we just don't have. And so I think, you know, that's about your only option if you really want that kind of training.
Yeah, it's like the guild system never died out over there. You go over there and you're working in a shop that is, you know, fifth generation blacksmiths, or you're forging in a forging event like we did one in Ypres in Belgium in front of a cathedral, and or you're working in a, you know, in a shop in an anvil that's 400 or 500 years old. I mean, it's just history is all around you, and they learned it from. And it seems like generally they treat the craft more seriously there. It's not so much. I mean, and you can be. I guess this is me harping on the U.S. It's like you can be a hobbyist. I'm a hobbyist. You can be a hobbyist, but you can still really strive for a very high level of, you know, the finished product, right? I mean,
absolutely.
If you struggle with the forging, get it close, and then go to the files and make it something that you would want to pass down to somebody.
I've been taking this class through Abana the past past month, and it's a Zoom online thing. It's called The Business of Blacksmithing, and Lee Morrill, the president of Abana, is the guy putting it on. And you know, he's been a professional blacksmith for 30 some odd years, and I'm definitely a hobbyist. I mean, I have a business for it. It's a side business, you know, I just making some of my things on the web. And so he's teaching this class from like a completely different perspective as far as business goes, than I'm doing. You know, I'm making my things in my little shop, posting on social media, and then redirecting people to a website. And he's talking about punching time clocks and, you know, efficiency of motion in the shop and where you place your stock. And, you know, just a lot of stuff that I'm not really touching on. But if I look at your shop just in the videos, it's obvious, especially with this new shop, and we're kind of skipping ahead here, but it's obvious you've spent time laying out, you know, where your tools are. And it looks like it's been influenced by where you came from, as far as the European tour, so to speak, is considered, you know, is.
Yeah. Well.
And, yeah, you know, how that affected how you laid the shop out.
Yeah, it's. So, I try to keep it very clean, but organization. It stresses me out having a shop with 500,000 extension cords on the ground. You're tripping over top tools, bottom tools. So I treat every project like ground zero. This is the focus. And I clean up the shop accordingly, set all my tools out. I'll always have, you know, if I'm hand forging, the hammer is always going to be on the anvil the same way, just so that I can program myself for these set of motions to be the most efficient with the heat. So if I'm taking it up to heat, you know, I'm losing, 1% of scale every time I take it up to heat. I mean, I'm slowly wearing away the material, so to speak. So every, you know, heating cycle counts. And the most you can do efficiently is the best. There's no room for, okay, well, where is this punch? Or, okay, I've left the punch in too long. It's overheated. Now it's bent. And now you've got to wait to straighten it and cool it. I mean, just be efficient so that none of those issues come up.
So that came from your time overseas, you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
That mindset? Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, beforehand, it's kind of like, oh, take your time. Best of luck. Okay, it messed up. So now it's like, no, play time's over. It's time to be serious about it. And, you know, efficiency counts. Just make sure that the tooling, you know, I love tooling because it can help control and limit the errors. Because the steel wants to do its own thing, right? It's going to want to fold over and hold shut, go to rhombus. So it's trying to really think through all the forging steps, where you want it to go at the end. And if it requires tooling, no problem. Just buckle down and build the tooling. Hopefully you have some tooling that can help out and that saves you a little bit. But, you know, there's some people that are incredible smiths with hand forging. And I know, like, Colonial Williamsburg, if you ever if you go there and you talk to, like, Peter Ross and
right.
I'm thinking of Jay Close and a couple of the other heavy hitters there, you know, that can do fantastic hand forging. I never really went down that route. I like power hammers too much. So I kind of delved more into the power hammer side. So,
well, I'm leaving the world of hand forging behind. the more I forge with power forging equipment, the more fun I have with it and the more tools I want to make for it. And the less out of practice I get with hand forging. And it's one of those things that if you don't keep in practice, you absolutely will struggle going back to it, you know?
Yeah. And I worked in, my eye opener for power hammer use tooling kind of in a big way was when I worked at coffee shop in Israel. I mean, the guy's, I don't know what he is now, maybe 80 now plus.
Yeah, he's in his 80s, I think.
So he's in his 80s, and he's a character. Either he likes you or he doesn't like you, and it's vice versa. But we got along great. But, I mean, the guy's getting up there, and he's still rocking out on a hammer. And
I mean, he just lost a leg.
Yeah, diabetes took his leg.
Yeah.
So.
But still going.
He's still going, but that's the thing. It's like with a hammer, with a press, even with a fly press, you know, you can extend your lifespan forging versus, you know, now I hand forge. If I'm doing something heavy, I'll get tendonitis in my elbow and I'll have it for like 3-4 months. So,
right. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, power hammer is great in that aspect. You can pretty much go until you want to stop.
Yeah. I'll be 49 in July, and, I'm finding that I don't recover as quickly as I used to. Mm-hmm. I had a bad case of tendonitis from taking too heavy of a hammer to demonstrate for a bunch of school kids. I didn't realize we were going to have as many kids come through this farm and agriculture day thing. And I wound up taking like a 3.5 pound hammer. And I wound up, you know, they wanted to see this thing over and over and over, and I forged all day long with this heavier than usual hammer. I'd been using like a 2.5.
Mm-hmm.
And I wound up with a case of tendonitis for almost a year.
Yeah.
From just that one day. I just couldn't get rid of it. But, yeah, the way that you care for your tooling, you know, you said you like making tooling, and it's evident in those videos because the care and quality of your tooling is higher than most people are putting into their final product. And, you know, I don't know anybody that's really into blacksmithing that doesn't like making their tooling. Usually it's part of the fun. And, but it's rare to see someone take so much effort to make the tooling look as good as what they're making with the tooling. And I really, really appreciate that about your stuff, because I'm completely the opposite. I had to make a twisting wrench last night because the one I'd been using just broke on me. And I welded up this ridiculously ugly tool just because I needed it kind of on the fly. And literally I was in the middle of using that. And I thought, man, this is not how John would make a tool.
Yeah. I mean, look, if you're doing production runs of something breaks, you've got to quickly fab up. Yeah, no problem. I just, I appreciate, I mean, it's kind of like the whole package. I always try to have a clean shop. If I'm going to film something, it's, you know, if the world is going to look at what I'm showing, I want it to be presented in the best light possible.
Yeah.
And, it just trying to have a quality product from beginning to end, whether it's a video, whether it's a hand tool, whether it's a finished product, it just kind of carries over to, you know, every aspect of the profession. So
it makes a big difference in overall, presentation. That is for sure.
Yeah. I mean, you see, I've seen over the years a lot of the just the hobbyist kind of mindset of throw it together, shoot it out there, a lot of ego, a lot of talking. So at least my attempt is leave ego at the door, no talking, just show the craft in the best light possible that you can. And, you know, at least for me, I like clean forging. So the tools will be.
And it speaks for itself, you know. You don't have to have a big ego or a persona if your work is doing the talking. So,
right. And that's the cool thing with blacksmithing is, even though I'm not saying anything, I'm really speaking the language of blacksmithing. So somebody in the Ukraine can see and say, oh yeah, I know what he's doing.
Yeah, exactly.
So it doesn't matter. I love the videos. overseas where it's like it's either they're in India or Turkey or Japan. As soon as the video starts, they're not talking, they're going in and they're working. That's what I like to see. So just see what kind of tools they use, and it's just all business. So that's what I like.
Well, I'm sure you've heard this before, but Torbjörn Amon in Sweden does a very similar style of video.
His stuff is great.
Very, doesn't talk a lot, but the work and the documentation of the work is top notch, and that's the reason why he's so successful. It's not his ego, it's not his finesse with social media or anything like that. It's the work he's doing and how he presents it, and it makes a big difference. Anyway, it's inspiring to me. I'm definitely in the hobbyist mindset, and I'm trying to move away from the extension cords across the floor and throw things all around, and things are laying on the floor, and you're working six different projects at once, and I'm trying to move away from that and more towards a focused, either one project or at a time or one type of project at a time, because it keeps things a lot more simple in the end. But it's difficult. I found that it's difficult to move from that model to the more organized model. And
Yeah. It's hard though. I mean, if you're doing multiple projects, let's say like you've got three different items in the forge, one's a handle, one's a bit of tooling, and one's say like a hammer or a punch or something. And trying to juggle those volumes and what to do is it's a challenge. I mean, for me, I prefer if I'm going to do something, it's do something so I'm making four items and I'm doing the same forging step right there. Get it all done and then mentally switch to, okay, that is done. Every single one is squared away. Go on to the next forging step. Because if you try and juggle multiples, it's just harder. So.
Let me ask you about your power hammer. You said it's a Sennheiser, right?
Yes, Sennheiser, it's 110 ram weight for the hammer. I think it's 50 kilogram or 40, I don't know. But I got it a
It's a
couple years
hundred and
ago.
fifty, yeah.
Okay. So it's a Turkish hammer, and they don't make them anymore, which kind of sucks. But I got mine in 2014. It's been a great hammer. I mean, for its weight class, I don't know of a better one. Of course, once you get up to 200 and higher, then you got rebuilt nozzles and all that jazz. But no, it's been great. It's had some standard stuff go wrong. Like I've had some air hoses blow. I've had to replace. The starter got fried because it was attached to the hammer. So I built a stand on the floor to keep it separate from the hammer.
Was that what happened recently with the motor?
No,
Or
the
not
motor
recently.
I had, No, this is something different. The motor is a 10 horsepower Baldor motor, but the start and stop on this thing apparently is super hard on the motor. So, what I was doing when I first got it, and I've been using it for years, it was just start, stop, shut it down in between heats. And so now I'm trying to prolong the life of the motor. If I fire it up, I'm trying to have all my ducts in order so that I can have it running until the forging is done for the most part.
Gotcha.
Once it's idling, I guess the motor's under very little stress, but it's that initial shock to get it up and running. But otherwise, so far it's been pretty good. Haven't had any major knocking in it yet. At some point, I'll have to do a lift the ram out and do an overhaul, but hopefully it gives me a few more years before I have to do that.
So parts for that, you have to make them?
Probably. The company in Turkey, I've sent them emails back and forth over the years for different questions, and it's almost always in broken English. The distributor that sold them years ago, he's good luck trying to contact him. Yeah, I think he's on his sailboat now, out from the world. And they don't you know make them anymore. So yeah, I think that it's just going to be a labor of love to keep this beast running. But
yeah. They look real similar to like the SAMAC, and I know SAMACs are still available.
SAMACs are similar. I think they do have some differences though. Like the lower die is adjustable. It's allowed to like pivot, whereas this one is fixed.
Yeah.
So there are a few little differences, but yeah, I would say it's close to the SAMACs. So.
There's some guy that's been showing up on the Power Hammer Forging groups on Facebook lately pushing some refurbed Turkish hammers. And I think at least a couple of those that he was moving recently were Sahindlers.
Okay.
But yeah, it's all of a sudden in the last few months, this guy's like pushing, you know, 4 and 5 refurbed hammers a month. And I don't know where he's come from or what he's done, but I know of at least one guy here in the U.S. who has taken delivery of one and seems to be pretty happy with it.
From what I've heard or been told, the older Sahindlers are better made than the newer ones. So if you can get a refurbished older one, you'd be better off. Well, depending on if they crash the hammer or not, but yeah.
So did you buy that one new?
Yeah, I bought it new.
Okay. Do you have to have it delivered? I mean, you bought it from overseas or was there?
No, I got it in, I can't remember the man's name now. It's not Bob Patrick. Brian Russell, I think that's the guy's name. Anyhow,
okay.
He used to have a website like powerhammers.net, powerhammers.com, and he used to be the U.S. distributor for Sahindlers. And
I gotcha.
Yeah, so I bought mine from him. I drove over there, picked it up, put it on a trailer. Of course, I took it back to my ghetto shop down south, so it was quite the ordeal to get that thing in there. But yeah, so he used to sell them. But he got out of the business, and then they stopped making them. So I think Pia Tool or Centaur Forge, one of them, carried this for a while as well. But then and then they carried the Power Hammer dies for this hammer, and I don't even think they do that now. So, so yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, what's the ghetto shop?
Oh, I rented a space when I came back from overseas and I found a job being a fireman. I spent, I think, first 2 years trying to look for a place I could rent. And so anyhow, I rented some space that was closer to my fire job in spring. And I think I was the only one there. The rent was cheap, but it was colorful. I think I was the only one there that hadn't been in prison, didn't have a neck tattoo, wasn't making like either. I was talking to the owner once. I mean, the place was great because you could do anything you wanted in there. But, you know, the cops would come in, and it was a storage unit place with a little bit of power. And I would shut down the whole left side of the complex trying to fire up a welder. So I had to run everything through a generator, and it was a pain in the neck, but yeah, I mean, they were making like pipe bombs and methamphetamine, and cops are like, you hear them in the distance, like I'm foraging, and they're like, all right, back up 10 feet, stop, you know, that kind of thing.
That's hilarious. That's really funny. My first experience with bladesmithing, I saw a guy in college. He came to the dorm one day. This was like in 1993, 1994. This guy comes to the dorm one day, and he's got this cool knife, and he's showing everybody. And I said, where'd you get that knife? And he said, well, I made it. And I said, get out of town. I've got to see how you did that. So I went to his house and saw his little forge set up. And he introduced me to this other guy in town. named Steve, and Steve had a really pretty well outfitted bladesmith shop with a homemade power hammer. It had railroad tracks for the dies, but it was like one of those old Da Vinci style cam hammers, you know. Mm-hmm. It actually worked pretty well. He had a treadle hammer and he had some really nice belt grinders. But anyway, he was in a storage unit like you're talking about. And so after I'd get off work and go by this U-Haul storage place in town, it was a bright orange rows of, you know, these units, and he'd roll the door up and I'd back my truck up and we'd sit there and he'd teach me about forging and stuff right in the middle of this storage unit complex. It was kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm. You just got to find a spot that works. Once you get it, then you're building.
Yep.
So, yep, for sure.
So your new shop, so is it near where you live, I guess? I don't want to be too personal, but I mean,
It's out here on property. I bought some property in, I guess, 3 years, in 2018. And I'm living out here on the property. Got my shop here. So it's been a process, but it looks
amazing. It looks like a dream shop, really. It's fantastic.
Yeah, thank you. It's a work in progress, man. It's getting there.
So if you look at your last videos, like the last five or six videos, as I've been watching you, I was thinking, okay, this guy's going somewhere. He's got a plan. He's making tooling. And when I was getting stuff ready to talk to you, I noticed on your website that you were thinking about doing classes in the future.
Yeah, I'd like to. I really would like to kind of have that available for people that are just starting out, but also whoever else would be interested. I'm waiting on another anvil. I've been a one-man shop. It'll continue to be that way, but all my tooling has been built around that one person. So I never really had a need for handled tooling for students. So I've had a need to build that tooling so that, you know, nobody gets their hand broken with a sledgehammer kind of thing. But I need to get another forge so I'm waiting on that, I'm going to get another anvil, maybe another striking anvil. And I'd like to. So we'll see. I don't know if it's going to happen this year, but if I can get all my ducks in a row, maybe by early next year, I'd like to do something that would be more general pleasing. So I'm going to probably start off with some type of axe, whether it be like a hatchet, for people to make, may go into a kitchen knife for something simple, hammers. So I'm going to come up with a range of things, build tooling for it, and then just kind of see what interests. But it won't be very big. It just has to be, I think I could probably control about four people in the shop now. It's not a very big shop. We'll see. There's more interest and I can build it out, but I'd like to. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
So. I think you'd have a lot of interest. I really do. I think. So you're in Texas, and I know a bunch of guys that are in Texas. And here in Mississippi, I go to the Mississippi Forge Council meetings. Once a month. It's an Urbana chapter. You know, we do the normal Urbana type meeting where we have a demonstration and an iron in the hat, and then we just hang out and forge. Are you involved with anything like that around Texas, or do you know of?
Right. So
those kind of things.
Yeah. The group that been associated with for the longest has been HABA, the Houston Area Blacksmith Association, and I started in 2004, I think. Yeah, 2004. And so I would go to their meetings throughout the years. It seems like it's tapered off on that end. But I'm hoping to do some type of hammer in out here. I'm kind of dabbling with maybe doing one in the fall, which would be kind of like a, you know, everyone come over, hang out, forge, et cetera. So I'm figuring that out. But so the Haba group, yes, they are there. They do some meetings in Magnolia, but it's tapered off. The Balcones group in Austin is a lot more active, it seems. And they have more foraging events.
Is that the one that does the mobile loaves and fishes?
Yes. That's great.
Okay.
I go to that every year if I can. They couldn't do it this last go around because of COVID, of course. But they are really coming up in the world. I mean, there's a lot of big names that go there, and they have a great setup. They've got power hammers, but, you know, of course, the event is all hand forging.
And, right.
It's a lot of fun. I think I did one year, I did like a cleaver, and then it was a 3-hour time limit. I can't remember. Anyhow, it's a lot of fun. If anybody's in the area, it's worth checking out. And it's a crazy setup over there, the mobile loaves. It's a complex for, I guess, the homeless of Austin, where they can apply, and if they get in, they can live in these 400 square foot little tiny houses and communal kitchens. But it's just this whole sprawling complex of these little tiny houses. So kind of neat.
That's really cool. I first heard about them through the guys that do the Blacksmith's Pub podcast, and I had planned, I missed last year's meeting, and I had really wanted to go this year, and then it got canceled, and I was pretty bummed. It seems like it's getting to be one of the biggest foraging events in the South.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty cool. I mean, the concept is great, and they have, they've got a great foraging area. They've got plenty of parking because it's in this facility, and you know, there's food available for the masses. So, I mean, it's just, it's great. So.
Yeah. Well, everything's bigger in Texas. So I didn't expect that, that you would say, no, there's really no active meetings or anything around here.
No.
I knew about that one, but I didn't remember much about the Haba, group or how
the Lee
did
brothers,
their meetings.
I don't know, Alan Lee, he, what am I thinking of?
Yeah, they quit their event.
They pretty much stopped doing their demo, but they had a great combo demo with two different forging stations, and they had a big nozzle, and there was the big operation. They had a lot of people show up and catered a van, and it was cool. It was really cool. So they did it for 10 years. And then decided that was enough. So,
well, actually, I talked to some guys, some young guys. I don't know if you know any of these guys, but Mark Ling, Josh Rashida, and Russell Feller.
Yeah, Rashida is right next door. He's actually going to be going to Colonial Williamsburg soon. So,
yeah, I talked to those guys about 3 or 4 weeks ago at a Louisiana blacksmith meeting, and they have been working with the Lee brothers. And they're gonna kind of take over. They're gonna take on the mantle of the new combo demo.
Oh, cool!
And the Lee brothers are helping them kind of get that going. And so, you know, they're real young. They've got a lot of energy and probably more time on their hands. So I was really excited to hear that. I think they're gonna do a great job with it.
Are they gonna try and do it in the Lee brothers shop then?
I don't know if they're going to do it there or if they're going to do it in one of their own locations.
Gotcha.
I want to say that they've got some area in mind that's different from that. But
well, cool.
I didn't put that together with Haba for whatever reason. I knew about the Lee Brothers combo event, but I just didn't think about Haba being a part of that.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure who's running Haba right now, but. Yeah, the Lee brothers did their own thing. I mean, of course, it was affiliated. Haba would be there for registration of members and things. But, I don't know who's spearheading the Houston group right now.
Yeah. So I got some friends that were really involved in the combo demo for years. Lyle Wynn and Stan Bryant. They're not far from me, and I know they were disappointed to hear that was kind of not going to be a thing anymore. But I think these young guys are going to do a great job. You know, they're all good blacksmiths, and they're really excited about it. They've got a lot of energy, so I think it's in good hands.
Yeah, I mean, it's always great when the younger generation gets excited for the craft, right? I mean, it's nothing worse than is like one set group, age group, and they slowly, age out. I mean, where there's nothing new.
That's the way it works.
So, yeah. Yep.
Let's see. So, what is your favorite thing to forge? I know you like making tooling, but is there a specific tool that you like to make? What does John Rigoni do when he wants to just relax in the forge?
No, there's no relaxation. No, I think the end of the day is the most enjoyable thing is to come up with my biggest. I love the forging. So if I can tie forging into the project, that's the goal. But really, most satisfying thing is I like making tools. Tooling is a hassle, and I have to, have enough drive, or not drive, let me think it up. I have to really find it to be important enough to make that bit of tooling, go through the effort and make it. But it's when you can hold something that is like a hand tool, and all the problems have been worked out, the balance, the weight, is it aesthetically pleasing, and is it from the right materials? It doesn't work, So for me, that's the most enjoyable thing. And it doesn't really matter what tool it is.
Just as long as everything comes together. Yeah.
Yeah. I enjoy a good finished product. So
cool.
I guess kind of an open-ended thing, but.
That makes good sense, because at the end of your video, when you lay the finished item down for the final shot there, that's what you're telling me.
It's right,
that,
exactly.
That thing that you lay down, I get it. It's a good answer. So, let's see. I know you're busy. I won't take up too much more of your time. I got one last question. The thing that brought you into my world was when I got a fly press.
Right.
And so I started, looking around for fly press tooling ideas, and I came across your video of the bottle openers.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the one where you've got the most video of the fly press in action, maybe. But, it had the tooling set up for your slot punch and then your the tooling on the power hammer. I've probably watched that video 30 times. And so that's my favorite Rigoni Ironworks video. And
okay.
So what is your favorite video? What's the one that you're the most proud of? Or do you have one?
I guess, I don't know. I mean, I some are good, some are bad. I had to work for a video or two. I had to come up with tooling for this wood chisel project and trying to figure out a way to forge a cone from one solid piece of metal. And then I guess that Bartolucci flower, I tried off and on for that project for years until I could come up with something that looks, presentable enough, I guess. But, I don't know. I'm getting better with every video. I'm trying to, produce more content as the projects, arise and, slowly just getting better at the process. But,
I noticed lately you've been pretty steady, putting out videos. It's been great to see. And, I noticed you started doing some more stories and stuff on Instagram.
I'm just trying to put out, the work is always the same. I'm always staying busy here, but it's just trying to make the effort to you know, digitize it, to put it out there. You know, if I'm going to make a tool, if it's interesting enough for video, you know, maybe I could kind of teach a certain forging aspect, then I'll make the video. Kind of thing. So.
Well, cool. Well, man, again, I absolutely love your stuff, your work, your content, your work ethic. It's inspiring, and I love seeing it all the time. So once again, thanks a bunch for taking the time on one of your days off to chat with me. I really appreciate it. And I think everybody that listens to the podcast is really going to get a kick out of it. So thanks again, John. I really, really appreciate it. You bet. Yes, absolutely. All right. Well, maybe I'll see you in Texas if you do a hammer in or some classes. I'd love to come down.
Cool stuff. All right. We'll see how it goes.
All right. Thanks,
all right,
John.
Sir.
Have a great day.
Yes, sir. You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Once again, that was John Rigoni. Thanks, John, for taking the time out of your busy schedule to do the podcast with me. It means a lot, and I can't wait to see what you get up to next. I hope those classes take place. If so, I'm definitely going to make the road trip to Texas to do that. I hope everyone enjoyed that. That was a great interview. I had a great time with that, and I hope everyone is having a great day. Thanks for the listen. See you next time.